at number one. Welcome one of our regulars. We always bring him on the first Friday of the new month, and that is Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary and Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Hey, Dorsey, welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Flash. How are you and everybody doing in Cleveland?
We are enjoying a real hot summer, and the Indians are still in first place. We had a rough road there with those Twins, but my gosh.
Well, I was, and I know you were too, glad to see the Twins get out of town. I cannot understand how a team that is so bad raises their game and plays so well against the Indians. I can't figure that out.
They got our number. No doubt about that. They got our number.
Yeah.
Hey, I know there's a couple things you want to get into. I want to talk about the RNC and the DNC, but I don't know if you knew Steve LaTourette. Steve was one of our regular guests here on America's Workforce, and a lot of people are expressing their condolences because this guy was a true friend of workers. Did you know him at all?
Yeah, I had talked to him a couple times, going to legislative conferences in D.C., talked to him about different issues. That was when I was business manager with the Insulators. Our Insulators International, our political director, all our officers were big fans of Steve LaTourette. I mean, whenever they had an issue or a problem or anything, they could go to him. He had an open-door policy. We're able to talk to him. When I was there in D.C., I was able to talk to him about any issues that were affecting our members here. Yeah, he was a good guy. He was a big supporter of organized labor. He stuck up for the middle class. He wanted everybody to have an opportunity and to have a job that they could raise their family and provide wages and benefits and protect the community. I mean, he was a good guy. And I told you off the air. Wow, that was a shock. I didn't even know he was sick. And to see that he had passed. I mean, 62. That's
too young.
That's way too young.
Way too young. You know, the interesting thing about Steve, too, when he went to Congress, he really didn't know all that much about organized labor. I mean, labor did not support him back in 94. That was when the GOP took over Congress. And just the kind of guy he is, though, he's very open. And when labor approached him and talked to him and educated him, and it's, you know what, I bring that up because it's kind of what you do down in Central Ohio with some of the conservatives, with some members of the Republican Party. Because, you know, on the whole, a lot of the GOP, they don't like unions. They don't like unions.
But, right. They don't. But then once they learn about us and they understand some of our issues and some of, you know, what we do for the middle class and how we train our members and our apprentices at no cost to the taxpayer, they really love the business model that we represent. You know what I mean? That's where I think that they come on board. But you're right, and I can remember those days in the early and mid-90s, and heck, even the early 2000s, when labor leaders kind of scoffed at Republicans or conservatives, and you gotta talk, you gotta engage these people, you gotta educate them on your issues, because you never know when somebody's gonna be there that can help you out. And you're right, that's what we're trying to do in Central Ohio and more across the state. I know that was done, you know, very well with Steve LaTourette, and it's good that he was open-minded and was educated to labor. But, you know, we've talked about this before on your show. People who don't come from organized labor really don't have a good understanding about it. And a lot of your ideas and thoughts about positions that you take are based on your upbringing and your family and what you read. So if you don't have a member that's in organized labor, or if you haven't been educated about the George Meanies and the labor movement and the Samuel Gompers and what was done and how people used to live, you know, in the 40-hour work week and good wages and benefits and stuff, you really don't understand. And that's what we try to do. We try to educate a lot of, because, you know, on the statewide level, we have legislators that are, you know, my state senator's a small business owner. You have lawyers, you have doctors, you have retired school teachers. So a lot of them don't really understand, and a lot of them have a hard time differentiating between UAW and plumbers and pipe fitters. You know, they don't understand how those are different unions, or SEIU and operating engineers, you know. So all unions are different. And I'll tell you a funny story, and you can kind of take this to heart because you're an Indians fan. It's like a friend of mine the other day says, you know, I don't like labor unions. And I said, why not? He goes, well, I'm just not a big fan of the teachers union. And I go, really? I go, do you like baseball? And he goes, oh, I love baseball. So what about the Yankees? He goes, man, I hate the Yankees. I said, I hate the Yankees too, but I still love baseball. And he's like, yeah, I guess I see your point. So not all are the same, you know what I mean? And that's what we have to do. We have to educate these people that we come and engage, and we have to educate them that not all unions are bad, you know, that we're all out there trying to fight for the middle class. We might have our different issues and our different ways of going about it, but I think we all can agree that we want to see people have a shot at the middle class to make a good living and earn a good income and provide for their family.
I'll take that one step further, too. Baseball has a union.
Exactly.
There you go.
That's right. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you go. You pay that money every day to go watch those union members play, but you don't like unions.
But you don't like unions, right. Yeah. And we can say the same for football and basketball as well. So there you have it. While we're on politics and all that, let's talk about the RNC and the DNC. Now, it was really interesting being here in the middle of it all with the RNC. It was certainly good for Cleveland. And every time I got out, I worked out at the municipal court. I came outside and I looked at that giant Hilton project, which was all union. And I tell you, we would not be able to have that convention here if it wasn't for people coming together. That hotel was pivotal, without a question, to bring the convention over here. Any thoughts after this and also the Democratic National Convention?
Well, you know, I didn't get to go up. There was a couple of events I was invited to in the evenings, and unfortunately I was unable to go up. But I knew a lot of friends that were up there. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about on the show. I mean, it seemed like it was a success, everything I saw on TV. In and out of the convention, you know, seemed like that it was good, that the security was good, the police did a great job. Everybody they brought in to help, it seems like they did a good job. I mean, there was protesters and stuff, but there was no riots. It didn't seem like there was any violence or anything. So I think that the big winner in the RNC convention, I think, was Cleveland. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you talk about the police presence. It was amazing. If anybody thought about doing anything stupid, it would be suicidal. I mean, they were walking around with all kind of automatic weapons and everything. And the police, what was really effective, Dorsey, was the bicycles. And hats off once again to Chief Calvin Williams, because he put on a patrolman's uniform, got on a bicycle, went right in there.
Wow, that's great.
He went right into the whole thing there, and he was, you know, shaking hands and talking. Because, you know, right now, as I mean, not just in Northeastern Ohio, but around the country, where relations with police are a bit tumultuous. And they
have to improve on both sides. You're right. They have to improve.
And it was definitely a great show, no doubt about it, and hopefully something that we could build on. As far as the politics that were discussed, I want to talk about that.
Oh, boy. It seemed like the difference between the RNC and the DNC convention was it seemed like the RNC was not the Republican National Convention. It was the Trump show.
Yeah.
Every night was Trump, 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 all about Trump. And I even said this to a friend of mine a week before the convention. I said, man, I said, I looked at the roster of speakers for the Trump convention. I looked at the roster of speakers for the DNC. I said, there's, you know, not only in size, but also in scope. There's no comparison. I mean, you know, the RNC convention was over every night at 10:15, 10:20. The DNC convention, the main speaker, wasn't even get to speak till 10:30 because there were so many speakers. So it was a lot of late nights watching the DNC convention. But the one thing that I'm trying to convey to our members, and, you know, union members, 20-25%, we have Republicans, and they kind of lean to that conservative side. But the one thing that I hammer on all of them, and I talk to them all, and I've even heard a couple of guys converting in the last couple of weeks who have supported Donald Trump, is like, you know, the biggest thing is, how can you support a guy that is against raising the minimum wage, thinks workers in this country make too much money, and is also for right to work? And then the cherry on top of the terrible sundae is his VP pick. He picks a guy that when he was elected governor, he vowed not to touch prevailing wage and not to do anything with right to work. And two of the first things he did was he jammed through right to work and he abolished prevailing wage in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've talked about it on your show. Doing away with right to work really hurt the private sector unions, or I'm sorry, the public sector unions in Indiana. And it hurt the private sector unions a little bit, too. But the real death knell for the building trades unions in Indiana has been the doing away with the prevailing wage. And I've got a report I have to send to you. I just got it the other day. I met to a couple of House people who are kind of on the fence about prevailing wage. And the one thing that they're seeing right away in Indiana, and it's not just schools, it's some major projects, is because of the doing away with prevailing wage and lower industry standards, they're getting a lot more out-of-state workers and a lot more transient workers that are doing those projects in the state of Indiana, and a lot of out-of-state contractors that are bringing out-of-state workers, and it's not good for a lot of those communities in Indiana, and it's taken a lot of the money and a lot of the resources away from the state. And I think that that's why you see a lot of people in Indiana specifically, and I've read a lot of it on both sides, Republican and Democrats, that they're very happy that Donald Trump picked Mike Pence because they were glad to get rid of him.
I heard his poll numbers were low. I did catch that. So you're doing some educating with some members because there's this illusion, and a lot of union members are supporting Trump because he's going to bring all those jobs back from China.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's getting his clothing line produced there.
But once
you have that dialogue with members and you bring that up, do they see the light? What's your thoughts?
I think a lot of them do. I mean, you still have some of the conservatives or some of the members of our unions that are, you know, if they read something, boy, they believe it to be true. And I mean, they harp on Hillary about the untrustworthiness, dishonest, you know, this and that. And that's what we just try to get through to them. You know, these are the two, and this is the best pick by far and away for you, for your family, for your union, and for your paycheck. And that's what you have to think about when you go in there and vote. You know, and I keep it simple with them. Like I said, right to work, prevailing wage, you know, workers' rights, things like that. I try to keep it as simple as I can. I don't even go into the Supreme Court, how important that is. I mean, we talked about it on your show 6 months ago. We really dodged a bullet with the passing of Justice Alito. I mean, if he would have stayed alive and was able to cast his vote, we'd have national right to work right now.
I know. Yep.
Everybody is. I mean, it's you know. And then another thing, I don't talk to our members too much about this, but I was discussing this with my wife the other day. The Supreme Court is incredibly important. It's the law of the land. But the court that is equally important, and I was talking to a good friend of mine, Dave Caldwell from the Steelworkers yesterday at lunch about this, is those labor board appointments are important, and the president has a lot of say in that. And also the Court of Appeals, the Federal Court of Appeals that is the last step before the Supreme Court, is incredibly important. And a federal court appeals judge hears 270 to 350 cases a year. So he's right there interpreting and making the law, whereas the Supreme Court might hear 80 cases a year. Mm-hmm. So the Supreme Court is important, but by volume, it's the Court of Appeals that is equally, if not more, important. And, you know, when you go and you cast your vote for president, you're not just voting for a guy that's going to make America great, or you're not just voting, you know, for Hillary, you're voting all the way down, and I don't think guys understand that. I don't think they understand the importance of their vote.
No,
you know?
No, no. It goes way beyond that. You're absolutely right. And it's interesting you bring up the federal courts, because have you noticed it's been the federal courts that have been striking down these restrictive voter ID laws? There was one in North Carolina. There was one in North Dakota, Texas. Those are all appeals courts. Those are all federal appeals courts. Well, they're federal courts, and then they try to take them to appeals court. But those are federal courts that are overriding the legislature because they're turning the screws too far to the right.
That's exactly right. And we have a chance here. If Hillary Clinton get elected, she can appoint that ninth Supreme Court justice. We have a chance for the first time in 50 years to take that court a little bit more towards the middle, where they're looking out for workers and middle-class families and some of the legislation that they uphold and that they hear and that they, you know, that mm-hmm. that they pass. And that's hugely important. Another thing that I don't think a lot of people are talking about, and I wanted to get your take on this, is the polling. I know that the polling is very interesting, and, you know, I've been keeping track of Florida, Pennsylvania, Michigan, obviously, and Ohio, but also Arizona and Georgia. I mean, it seems like those states that are traditionally red states are starting to come into play because the conservative base of the Republican Party is very turned off by Trump. And I'm wondering how that's going to affect not only Senate races with Toomey and McGinty in Pennsylvania and Ted Strickland and Rob Portman here in Ohio and John McCain in Arizona. But I'm also wondering how that's going to affect, you know, county races in Cuyahoga County, Franklin County, Montgomery County, Hamilton County, some of your big city counties. Because I know here in Franklin County, we got a handful of huge county races. We have, of course, the huge prosecutor race that I've talked to you about, Zach Klein and Ron O'Brien. We have a Franklin County recorder's race where there's a young man named Danny O'Connor who's got a tough race against Daphne Hawk. That's going to be interesting. And then we have two county commissioners, Kevin Boyce and John O'Grady, two of the best Democrats, two of the most progressive pro-labor Democrats I've ever had the opportunity to work with. And all of them are going to be on the ballot. So it's going to be interesting to see, because I know in 2012, Mitt Romney got 37% of the vote here in Franklin County, and latest polls show Trump's ceiling at about 32%. So it'll be interesting to see what Hillary's coattails are like, not only across the state of Ohio, but other states that are swing states, but also in the county races as well.
Yeah, that's one to watch. And I'm concerned about people not voting. You might have heard that a lot of folks don't like Trump, and Hillary has some negatives, so they may sit home this November, and that could make the election even more volatile.
I agree, and that could throw some of the polling out of whack, too.
Yeah,
You're absolutely right.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about this jobs fair you had for vets and issue one, okay?
All right, sounds good.
Real good. Dorsey Hager on our live line of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades. Russ Choma, Mother Jones Magazine, has also been following Donald Trump, and he'll be reporting on that. It's all part of America's workforce. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, 500,000 strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to America's Workforce, broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived on awfradio.com. Dorsey Hager joining us on our live line from Columbus. Dorsey, of course, the executive secretary, treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades. Once again, the website, columbusconstructiontrades.org. Before we get into this vets job fair, you got to tell me about the fire marshal. I read the story on the air, I think it was Tuesday. Trump goes to Columbus and he's complaining about the size of the crowd because the fire marshal wouldn't let as many people in as he had hoped for, and then he blamed the Democratic mayor.
He also blamed our fire chief, and one of the first things to happen right after he did that, which was good, was I sit on the Franklin County Convention Facilities Authority, and one of the people at the convention center immediately released the contract where his people had signed, you know, no more than 1,000 people, because we have construction, we have renovation, we're adding on to the convention center, so there's limited exits and egress. So, you know, the fire marshal had put into the contract no more than 1,000 people in case something, you know. And the Trump people were like, oh, yeah, that's fine. It's going to be a town hall meeting, 1,000 people. So a couple of the funny things that came out of it is, one is he's blasting the fire marshal and the mayor before he walks in, without even looking at the contract or talking to his people, which I'm reading more and more, there's a huge disconnect between him and his staff. The second thing is he gets on stage, and in a city that's mostly progressive, where he's trying to get Democratic voters to vote for him, he blasts the newly elected Democratic mayor, who was elected by 60% of the vote. And I'm just like, have you read a book on politics? I mean, just like when he goes to some of these towns that are suffering, or some of these areas that are suffering, one of the first things he says is, you know, you people need to vote for me because I'm going to bring jobs back. This place stinks. You know, this is, there's poverty everywhere. This, you know, I'm not going to use the words that I usually would use. I said, but, you know, this place is a crap hole, you know.
Right.
Well, those people live there every day. They know where they live is depressed. But you don't tell them, and you don't win them over by telling them that either.
No.
It's shocking, you know, how some of his politics. So, yeah, the mayor, I saw the mayor Tuesday night, we're at an event, and I saw him and I talked to him. I said, hey, you got a little national attention there. Probably not the kind you wanted, but, you know.
But,
no,
yep.
You know, any press is good press, I guess. And he's like, oh, geez. It was really funny. It was really funny. And my wife, even, who is not that political, sitting there watching the news, she's like, what is wrong with this guy? And I'm like, I don't know. He just, and then, you know, blasting the baby, the crying baby. Oh, my gosh, that was best.
I know.
That was the best. I just have a feeling that 15 or 20 years from now, Flash, our grandchildren are going to be watching old YouTube clips or whatever this, and they're going to be going, oh, my God, people voted for this guy? We're going to be like, yeah. We smoked on airplanes. We drove cars without seatbelts, and people voted for politicians that hated crying babies. That's what we did. That was our generation.
That was our generation, exactly.
Thank you for that. Yeah, your parents and grandparents won World War II, and you guys acted irresponsible and unsafe and voted for people that hated crying babies. Thanks for that. That was great.
You get a chance, the New York Times posted a video of the people that support Donald Trump at a lot of his rallies. It's pretty scary. It's really scary. And
there was on the dispatch.com, they had a video of three ladies. Two were from Bloomington and one was from Columbus. And, I mean, they were absolutely hysterical for 12 minutes just going on and on about Donald Trump. He's going to bring jobs back. He's not paid and bought. He's rich, but he's one of us. And I'm like, what in the heck have you guys been reading?
I know.
So, well,
the video,
really funny.
The video that the New York Times put together, I can't even play on the air because these people, it's off the charts. It's really off the charts. It's vulgar and racist, and I could go on and on and on. Real quick, we got a couple minutes left. I want to get into, what is this, the defeat of Issue 1? Which happened on Tuesday?
Yeah, I told you I saw the mayor the other night at an event. We had an amendment issue on the ballot. It was Republican-driven, that, and they had a guy that helped as well that's a Democrat that's kind of got some angst and anger towards City Hall because he can't get himself on City Council. So it was a really crazy ballot initiative. It was going to increase our City Council from 7 to 13 with the possibility of going up to 25. It was looking at adding about another $6.5 million a year to the budget and salaries and staff and stuff, and it was just a horrible issue, and not only was it not good for city and local government, but it was bad for unions and building trades too. And we got we got out to our members. We did phone banking, we did door knocking, we did member to member mailings. I did a robocall. We also helped financially, made a donation to the campaign to get this defeated, and it was defeated 72-28. There was 40,000 people out of about 518,000 registered voters that voted for this, and the people that brought the ballot initiative up could decide when it was going to be on the ballot by when they certified their signatures. So when they had their signatures certified, that put it on the ballot on August 2nd instead of November 8th, which made for a special election that cost the Franklin County Board of Elections $1.2 million. So we spent $1.2 million to have a special election because of a handful of angry people in which only 40,000 people voted, and I did the math, and I think it came out to $29.65 a vote.
Whoa.
So that's some horrible democracy in action, and that's why we were against it. That $1.2 million could be better spent on police safety, fire, you know, potholes, snow removal, trash removal, but instead we did it to hold a special election just to pacify a few angry people who can't get on city council. And it was horribly written. It was bad. And the city and the mayor and the president of city council, Zach Klein, and one of the city council members who's going to head the committee, Shannon Harden, have already said that they've put together, that they're going to put together a committee, look at expanding city council, but going to do it the right way. And more importantly, not only do it the right way, but figure out how much it's going to cost and provide, you know, how we're going to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And that's what this legislation didn't do. So I was glad it went down. A lot of people in organized labor, a lot of the building trades people, a lot of labor officials like myself came together, were very outspoken about it, and thank goodness that it got defeated.
That's good, good. And those special elections, too, are tough, too, because not too much voter turnout usually on those. But this one was resounding. You said 72% against? That's how many?
Yes, wow. 72-28, yeah.
Holy smoke.
So it was really... it was throttled pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. I understand you had a jobs fair for vets a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we're talking about city council. And we have a new city council member. He's been on the job for about a year, named Mitchell Brown, and I've developed kind of a relationship with him. Really respect the guy. Came through police. He's got some Cleveland ties, as a matter of fact. But he was our safety public safety director here in Columbus under Mayor Coleman. He's on city council now. And he had called me into his office one day to come and talk to him. And, you know, I didn't know what we were going to talk about. And he sat there and he said, Dorsey, he said, aren't you guys busy? I said, yes, we're busy. He said, what about your apprenticeship programs and how you bring people in? And he's explained this to me. So I went through it and he goes, what about vets? He goes, what do you guys do for veterans and vets? And I explained to him how we really like vets and we work with helmets to hard hats. We try to get those vets in and, you know, they're good members of our organization and we love to provide them job opportunities. He's like, I just visited a homeless shelter here for veterans. He goes, and it was truly agonizing. And it's really sat with me. He goes, what can we do to help some of these veterans in the city of Columbus? So we came up with some ideas, brainstormed. I worked with our JATC coordinators and the president of our apprenticeship conference, Steve Lipster, and we put together a veterans job fair on July 25th. And it was great. Councilman Brown came by. We had a lot of vets come through. Congressman Stivers came by, offered a couple sound bites, took a little tour of the facility, talked to our training director, talked about ways that he could go back to D.C. and help increase dialogue between helmets to hard hats to give us a place to not only draw people but also to provide jobs for our veterans. Because like I told Councilman Brown, you know, it's sad that our vets go off and fight for their country, whether it's 2 years, 4 years, or even longer, and then they come back, and there's no path to the middle class for them. There's no opportunities, and that's what we can do. And one of the big success stories that we had, I told you IBW 683, the electrical workers here in Columbus are incredibly busy, lots of work. And there was a gentleman came in that was a vet that his job had became displaced, and he had electrical training and electrical skills that he had learned when he was in the armed forces, and he came in with his resume and stuff, and one of the outreach coordinators, Julie Machieski for IBW 683, said, hey, can you go to work tomorrow? And he said, can I go to work tomorrow? Heck yeah. And she's like, all right. So she filled out all the necessary paperwork, got all his information, and guy went out to work the very next day, you know? So that was a win-win for everybody, and we've got to do more of that and got to help our community more. And Councilman Brown was very happy. Congressman Stivers, who's a big, big advocate of organized labor and what we're trying to do in workforce development. We've got to do more of that. So it was a big success.
Good. Yeah, we're going to get helmets to hard hats on the show. We haven't had them on for a while, so that's a step in the right direction. Dorsey, we're going to have to button it up. Great job as usual, my friend. Next time we'll be talking to you, it'll be right before Labor Day, okay?
It will be right before Labor Day. It'll be one day before the Buckeyes home opener against Bowling Green, and we'll also have a better idea of how the transformation of the Browns, the new regime, and the staff is going, because they'll have three preseason games under their belt, two of which I will be at, so I'll make sure I touch base with you before I venture into your beautiful city to see the Browns, and hopefully we'll be talking about the Indians getting hotter and getting ready for a playoff run as well, so we'll have a lot to talk about.
I love it. All right, Darcy, take care.
You too. Thanks, Flash. Have a great weekend.
All right. Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Quick break.